The unrest in the Middle East seems a long way from Pakistan, but there's plenty of internal turmoil there too. Today, a government minister was shot and killed in the capital, Islamabad. Shahbaz Bhatti was the only Christian member of the prime minister's cabinet. He's the second high-profile Pakistani politician to be murdered in the last 2 months. Both officials had spoken out against Pakistan's strict Islamic blasphemy laws. Bhatti had received death threats. But in a message recorded before his death, he vowed not to give in to those threats.
I'm ready to die for a cause. I'm living for my community and suffering people, and I will die to defend their rights.
That taped message from January was made public today after Shahbaz Bhatti was gunned down in Islamabad. Pakistani author Kamila Shamsi grew up in Karachi. She now lives in London. She says today's killing took few Pakistanis by surprise.
The worst thing about this is that it's completely unsurprising. Salman Taseer, the governor of the Punjab, was killed in January for precisely this reason, because he wanted to amend these really repressive and awful blasphemy laws. And we knew that Shahbaz Bhatti, who was one of the only other members of government to publicly express similar views, we knew he was a target. And when the news came through, there was a sense of, oh God, we knew this was coming. And that's been part of what's so awful. It's a terrible thing when a country knows that certain people within it are likely to be killed for what they believe.
So two senior government officials in Pakistan killed over these blasphemy laws. Tell us about these blasphemy laws. Why are they so controversial? Why do you consider them so repressive?
First of all, they're laws with a mandatory death sentence. So if you're convicted under them and the Supreme Court upholds the appeal, you will be hanged. Now, it should be said, the Supreme Court has never, ever upheld any such cases. No one has ever been hanged under them. But a lot of people sit in prison for years while it goes through the appeals process. And the logic behind that is, if you are accused under the blasphemy laws, immediately, as soon as people find out that you've been accused of blasphemy, your life is in danger. And so you must be taken into police custody and placed in solitary confinement. And the warped logic goes that this is for your own protection while the courts hear the case. And it's been used time and again to persecute people. You'll find, even though only about 2% of Pakistan's population is non-Muslim, that a large, large number of the people who are accused under the blasphemy laws are in fact non-Muslim or belong to minority sects.
Who supports these blasphemy laws? The majority of the country?
You know, I hate saying yes, but the answer is yes. The majority of the country feel that these laws protect the religion.
You know, some analysts have been drawing a sort of comparison between Pakistan and conditions in the Mideast at the moment. There is something of a comparison to be made, I guess. You have a very youthful demographic, young people with unmet expectations, many disgruntled, unemployed people, and a regime that's funded by the West and is telling the West it's us or the extremists. How far do you think the comparison actually goes, though?
I think the comparison doesn't go nearly as far as many people make it out to be, for one very basic and important reason, which is in 2007, there was a civil society movement within Pakistan to get rid of a dictator, General Musharraf, who was hugely popular with the West, who was saying it's me or the extremists. And in 2007, there was a movement led by lawyers and the media to get rid of him. And he did have to go. And so in some ways, we've had that moment. We're 3 years past that moment, and our problems are of a very different variety. And in some ways, it's a sort of quite a grim thing to think about as you see these wonderful scenes from people, places like Tunisia and Egypt. This reminder that it's only the beginning of the battle to get rid of the dictatorship. In fact, the bigger battle that follows is then what do you do with the country? What do you make the country? And what do you do with the problems that are already deep-rooted within it? Simply uprooting one man or even one system of government won't get rid of it.
So you think it's grim because you see Pakistan possibly as a sort of case study for what some Mideast countries might experience next?
I think you have to look at these countries very differently. Pakistan has had a long history of the Taliban being supported by elements within the state. And we've got Afghanistan right next door to us. But I will say the comparison goes so far in as much as Pakistan in 1988 got rid of a dictator, and then Pakistan in 2008 got rid of a dictator. And in both those instances, it was just the beginning, and the country didn't do enough to change what happened after that. And hopefully in Egypt and Tunisia, I hope we'll see something different. I hope we'll see people really wanting to take the country's future in their own hands and to look very deeply at the rot in the system. Maybe it would be worthwhile for someone there to stop to think about what you do to not just get rid of a military dictator, but to move the military to the sidelines.
Camila Shamsi, you were in Pakistan just 10 days ago. How did you feel today about hearing this news?
Just awful. Really, you know, you just want to weep.
Pakistani author Camila Shamsi grew up in Karachi. She now lives in London. Her most recent novel is called Burnt Shadows. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.